Ananda Sri Vaidya Gadadhara Shiva Sadi Gaur Bhakta Vrindikajai Sri Sri Radhakrishna Gopa Gopita Sayam Kunda Radhakunda Giri Govardhan Kijai Vrindavanam Kijai Maturidam Kijai Jagannath Swami Kijai Yamunamai Kijai Srimati Glasi Devi Kijai Samaveda Bhakta Vrindikajai Gaur Premananda Hari Hari Bo. All glory is the assembled devotees. All glory is the assembled devotees. All glory is the assembled devotees. All glory is to Shri Guru and Gauranga Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. So, actually, we should go to the Bhagavatam. Let's see. Bhagavatam. So we are reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, the 9th canto, 10th chapter, and yesterday we read text 1 and 2. Today we'll read text 3. So Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So I'll just read this text and we'll go on to the word by word synonyms after that, responsibly. Tashanu Chatatam Rajan Rishi Vistatvatarshivihi Shutam Ivarnitam Bhuri Vyasita Pater Mahuhu. So you can repeat. Tasha. Of him, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Ramchandra and his brothers. Okay. Anucharatam. Transcendental activities. Rajan. O King Maharaja Pariksit. Rishivihi, by great, whoops, it's a little loud. A little too loud. By great sages or saintly persons. Tatvadarshivihi, by persons who know the absolute truth. Shutam, have all been heard. He, indeed, Varnatam, as they have been so nicely described. Muri, many. Vaya, by you. Sita Patahe, of Lord Ramchandra, the husband of Mother Sita. More than often. That's a translation. O King Pariksit, the transcendental activities of Lord Ramachandra have been described by great saintly persons who have seen the truth. Because you have heard again and again about Lord Ramachandra, the husband of Mother Sita, I shall describe these activities only in brief. Please listen. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Modern Rakshasas, posing as educationally advanced merely because they have doctorates, have tried to prove that Lord Ramchandra is not the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but an ordinary person. But those who are learned and spiritually advanced will never accept such notions. They will accept the descriptions of Lord Ramachandra and his activities only as presented by the Tattva Darshis, those who know the absolute truth. In Bhagavad Gita, in the 4th chapter, text 34, the Supreme Personality of Godhead advises Pad Vini Prani Pratena Padi Prashna Sevya Upadeksham Dite Yanam Yaninastatva Darshanaha. Just try to learn the truth by approaching the spiritual master and inquire from him submissively unto him. The self-realized soul can impart knowledge unto you because he has seen the truth. Unless one is tattva-dashi, in complete knowledge of the absolute truth, one cannot describe the activities of the personality of Godhead. Therefore, although there are many so-called Ramayans or histories of Lord Ramchandra's activities, some of them are not actually authoritative. Sometimes Lord Ramchandra's activities are described in terms of one's own imaginations, speculations, or material sentiments. But the characteristics of Lord Ramchandra should not be handled as if something imaginary. While describing the history of Lord Ramachandra, Shukadeva Goswami told Maharaja Pariksit, "You have already heard about the activities of Lord Ramachandra. Apparently, therefore, 5,000 years ago, there were many Ramayanas or histories of Lord Ramachandra's activities, and there are many still. But we must select only those books written by the Tattva-darshis, Yaninas Tattva-darshanaha, not the books of so-called scholars who claim knowledge only on the basis of a doctorate." This is a warning by Shukadeva Goswami, Vishidish Tattva Darshanihi. Although the Ramayana composed by Valmiki is a huge literature, the same activities are summarized here by Shukadeva Goswami in a few verses. So, Omagana Tumaranda Shah. Gananjana Shlakaya Chakshuru Nitan Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So today we'll actually start talking about the Ramayana as a literature. Of course, we know that the Ramayana was composed by Valmiki Muni, and there's an interesting story about Valmiki Muni. Let me get to the beginning of my notes here. Yeah. Actually, before we describe that, we'll describe what the Valmiki Ramayana is. It has 24,000 verses and 6 khandas, 500 cantos, and there's an additional one called the Uttara Ramayana, which deals with the future, you know, what will happen in the future. Some of the scholars say the Uttara Ramayana is not actually part or written by Valmiki. I mean, there's some controversy there. Anyway, the Ramayana was originally recited by Valmiki to Lav and Kush, the sons of Lord Ramchandra, and it's described that they memorized it in one day. Such a large literature, 24,000 verses in one day. Pretty good. We cannot even do that in 24,000 lifetimes, so with the speak of one day. So, the tradition of reciting the Ramayana, at least in India traditionally, was that in the morning you talk about of Ram Nami, you talk about Lord Ramchandra's birth, and midday you would talk about the wedding, Sita Swayamvara, and in the evening you would talk about the coronation. In other words, after Lord Ramchandra defeated Ravan and he came back to Ayodhya. So this is actually the bona fide process. You have three different discussions, or the discussion will go throughout the whole day, but you start at the beginning and end with Ram's coronation. And generally, during the recitations of the Ramayana, you wouldn't really talk about Sita's being exiled in the forest or anything like that, because Ram Navami is taken as a joyous time. You don't want to talk about Sita being exiled and then all these things happening after that. So here's the story of Valmiki. And Valmiki was a Brahmin, and this may differ from the story that you're accustomed to from the Ramayana that you have, Ramacharita Manasas, but this is a story about Valmiki himself. So Valmiki was a Brahmin whose name was Loha Junga. And sometimes, some other literature says Ratnakara, but anyway, Loha Junga was his name. And he loved his family very much, and he used to rob even old women just to support his family. Just like you have dacoits here. So he was a Brahmin who was a dacoit. And so, therefore, once upon a time, he tried to rob the Sapta Rishis. That's like Agastya Muni, Atri Muni, etc. like that. And they were somehow walking on the path. Even though they could fly in the air, they were walking on the path. And they told him and preached to him. They said, aren't you aware this is a very sinful activity? Stealing from people, robbing, hurting people. And he said, I know this, I'm a Brahmin. However, I have to maintain my family somehow or other. And they understood how to preach to him. They said, well, we can empathize with that. However, if you are maintaining your family and your children are getting things and your wife is getting everything, do you think your family would be willing to take part of your karma, you know, share it, because they love you so much? He said, of course. They love me. They would do anything for me. And Saptarishi said, okay, just ask them. So he goes back to his wife, and he says, Priya, my dear wife, would you be willing to take part of the karma? And she says, what are you talking about? You're supposed to provide me saris and jewelry and gold and everything like that. And you're supposed to work. You get the karma. I get the goodies, so to speak. And so he thought, uh-oh, what about this love? And then he went to his son and daughter, and pretty much the same thing happened. They said, Dad, get back to work. You know, if it was the modern day and age, they'd say, Dad, I want an iPhone or whatever I want. So anyway, so he went back, and nobody wanted to accept his simple activities. And the sages said, see? He said, what should I do? And they said, well, you could chant the name of Ram, but I guess you're just too sinful for that. And they gave him, of course, the mantra, Mara, 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 which eventually became Ram, Ram, Ram. Like you chant it, I'm sure you all know this story. Mara, 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 Ram, 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 Ram. It's a trick. And so, as he was chanting this mantra, he became so determined, because sometimes when one is in a loving relationship and you're rejected or told, or you see that the person who supposedly loved you doesn't really love you, it's like painful for the heart. So Krishna says in the Gita that four types of people approach him. One person is in distress, another person wants money, another person is inquisitive, another person wants knowledge. So particularly in this case, Valmiki Muni was in distress. And he goes, oh, Mara, Mara, Mara. So the motive in the beginning was not pure. Just like we have this statement in the Bhagavatam, Akama, Mokshakama, Sarvakama, Udaradi, Tivrena Bhakti Yogena Yasheta Purusham. That whether one is full of material desires or free of material desires or desirous of liberation, one should enthusiastically worship Krishna. So be aware of your motivation, but still, you know, just like Dhruva Maharaj, his motivation was not pure. He wanted a kingdom greater than Lord Brahma. He wanted to teach his stepmother a lesson. And he did. So anyway, so he was chanting this with motivation, but he was so determined because he had been rejected in this material world, this loving relationship he discovered wasn't actually a loving relationship, that he didn't even notice an anthill was growing around him. And that's why it's called Valmiki, it was an anthill sage. So later on, the Saptarishis came back and they heard this chanting coming from the anthill. You know, big, big. Of course, you don't have that many ants here in Fiji, but like if you go to India, sometimes you see these giant ant hills. Of course, also in Africa and Brazil, they have these giant ant hills. And so the Saptarishis saw this ant hill chanting, Ram, 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 Ram. And basically, they removed the anthill and then sprinkled some celestial water on him and renovated his body. And then he was named Valmiki. So, So what happened is how he composed the Ramayana. Actually, was instructed by Narada to compose the Ramayana. And then later on, he was... I should read this portion of the story. He inquired from Narada. He said, please tell me who is full of virtues, who is full of power, who is full of resolve, determination, who is truthful and always has right conduct, who is knowledgeable, lovable, who has subdued his lower self, who has subdued, that means controlled anger, and who is above fault. And so Narada said, that's wrong. But he didn't compose the Ramayana at that particular point. What happened, because he had already realized the pastimes of Ram. Because as Srila Prabhupada states in the Bhagavatam, the purport, that when you become Krishna conscious, you have a spiritual television. Just like you have television here. What is it called, Sky TV or something like that? Sky TV? With so many channels? So when you become Krishna conscious, you get a spiritual TV with unlimited channels. And instead of going on your mobile phone anymore, or TV, whatever, you can tune in on any of the Lord's pastimes that you want. Like tonight, or now, while you're sitting in Bhagavatam class, hopefully not, you decide you want to see the Ramayana in person, you just close your eyes and the Ramayana appears before, the whole Ramayana story appears before you, Lord Ram. So I guess that's why the devotees sleep during Bhagavatam class. Because they're seeing the Ramayana. Ram, Ram. And I'm disturbing them. So that's what a pure devotee is like. You know, Premanjana Jyotya Bhakti Vilochaneva. Not only does he see Krishna everywhere, but he actually sees directly the pastimes of Krishna. And not only does he see directly the pastimes of Krishna, he or she enters into those pastimes. There are stories about Srinivas Acharya that he would go into a pastime of the Lord. Of course, he was a devotee of Radha and Krishna. And he would come out with a mala or a garland from that pastime. One time he went into a pastime, he was gone in the pastime for 3 days. And his wife was really upset because her husband basically had to come back to consciousness. So his wife called for his foremost disciple, whose name was Ramchandra Kaviraj. And the disciple sat next to the guru. And they entered into the same pastime. Wow. In the spiritual bodies, not in the material bodies, obviously. So they were both together. In this pastime, they were looking for something that Radharani had lost. And so they were going diving in the river, and finally they found an anklet or a towing or whatever it was that Radharani had lost. And then they came out at the same time, found it, and gave it to Radharani, and they both came out of their meditation simultaneously. So this is a pure devotee. So that's why it's said that no one can really understand the mind and consciousness of a pure devotee. So Valmiki was like that too. So Valmiki had already seen the pastimes of Ram, but he hadn't read the Ramayana, so he was wondering, how am I going to write the Ramayana? So one day, he was going and taking his bath in the river. And as he was taking his bath in the river, he saw there was a crane. A crane is a big bird. And he saw a hunter. There were two cranes. There was a female crane and a male crane. And they were both engaged in, romantic affairs. And the hunter shot both cranes. And Valmiki got so upset that he actually wrote a curse in poetry. And it's described in the Valmiki Ramayana, this was the origin of poetry, at least in that day, of Lord Brahma, or Yuga cycle. But it was, anyway, it was considered to be the origin of poetry, a particular meter. Meter means da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da, like that. So the whole Ramayana is written in the same meter. Bhagavatam has different meters, according to different verses, and sometimes there's prose in certain verses of the Bhagavatam. In the fifth canto, you've got a lot of prose verses. Prose means non-poetry, just like ordinary writing. So the Bhagavatam has different meters, and sometimes prose, whereas the Ramayana, the whole thing, 24,000 verses, is all the same poetry meter. In other words, the same author. So, then he composed this Ramayana. So, in the beginning of the Ramayana, there's many secondary stories, some of which we're going to tell right now, before we get to the main story of Lord Rama. He starts telling the story about Ravan, who's a very important personality. Of course, in the Valmiki Ramayana, he doesn't tell about the origin of Ravan, that he's one of the two giant Vijay. Doesn't mention that that's from the Bhagavatam. The Ramayana is an itihas. Itihas means thus it happened. You understand? The Vedic literatures are composed of course the four, what we consider to be the four original Vedas, and then you have the Upanishads and other supplementary literatures, Aranyaka literatures. Aranyaka means the forest literatures. Because the sages, they would go to the forest and share realizations. And even in the Upanishads, this will inspire some of you ladies, that some there are actually some ladies who are preaching in the Upanishads, who are gurus. One of them's name is Gargi. Who's Gargi? There's Garga and Gargi. That's a female name. So after the Upanishads, then you have the Vedanta Sutra. Vedanta Sutra, sometimes called the Brahma Sutra, which is composed by Vyasadeva, which is written in very short codes. Codes means that it was understood that people were intelligent, could understand short statements, didn't have to need a lengthy explanation. And then after that you have the Itihasas and the Puranas. Itihasa, as I said before, means that it happens, a history. Purana means old. You know, something that's old. And so the Purana means, or examples of the Puranas are like the Bhagavad Purana, like Srimad Bhagavatam, and there's 18 Mahapuranas and many, many secondary Puranas. And amongst the 18 Mahapuranas, six are meant for people in the mode of goodness, six are meant for people in the mode of passion, and six are meant for people in the mode of ignorance. That's why you have others like Rishiva Purana and other Puranas that are meant for different people in different modes of nature. So, let's get back to the Ramayana. So, anyway, so the Ramayana starts talking about Ravana's austerities. So, and Kumbhakarna's austerities. So, Ravana's austerities are very interesting. But of course we know that Ravana had two brothers and one sister. And Vibhishan, of course, and Kumbhakarna, and that beautiful girl, Sirpanaka. And then, which means the girl with the long curved nails. Just like sometimes the ladies consider very beautiful to have long nails, right? But to men, they just like to look like claws. Like my mother. Talking about my mother. Anyway, my mother has long nails still, even though she's 92 years old. And I got her an iPhone once, and she couldn't use it because the nails were too long. I said, cut them. She said, no, people won't think it's attractive. I'm sure. So Sirpanaka. Illusion. Can't even use an iPhone. So Sirpanaka had long nails, and they were all performing austerity together. And, you know, Ravana, and they were worshipping Lord Brahma, of course. And Ravana got to the point where he was cutting off his heads. He's known as Dasa Griva. Dasa Griva means 10 heads. They didn't always manifest simultaneously. It's just when he got angry or wanted to have a GBC meeting that they, you know, because each head was expert in something different. You know, one head was expert in philosophy, another head chanting mantras. In fact, he was quite expert in chanting Vedic mantras. It's described that sometimes even the demigods would invite Ravana to help them with sacrifices. He was a Brahmin. Let me describe his birth, actually, before I start talking about their austerities. You've got to go back a little bit. So, once upon a time, the demons were really upset because they were losing the battles to the demigods. So they thought, we got to become more powerful. And we're not that powerful. And the demigods, they have Brahmins. You know, we have our Brahmin, Shukracharya. But we need some more powerful, we need a powerful leader. Like, we need a Brahma Rakshasa. So that they were thinking of genetic engineering. How to have Brahmin Rakshasa, the cross of Brahmin with a Rakshasa. So, Shukracharya had this idea that we'll call for this beautiful Rakshasini girl, Kekasi, and send her to the ashram of this sage, Vishravas. And Vishravas was already married. He already had a wife, a nice kid, Kuvera. You know, it's nice to have a kid like Kuvera, isn't it? A rich son. We'd all love something like that, or a disciple like that, because he's the treasure of the demigods. And Kuvera originally had the Pushpaka Vimana. Kuvera originally was living in Lanka. You know, this actually belonged to the Yakshas. Kuvera's a Yaksha, it's not a Rakshasa. There's a difference. So, anyway, so they sent this lady, Kekasi, to Vishravas' ashram. He was just chanting his japa or something. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. No one ever was chanting. Sitaram. You know, I don't know who was chanting Sitaram. He's chanting Om. And so they sent Kekasi, and Kekasi starts, I guess, wiggling in front of him or something like that to attract him. He's chanting Hare Krishna. And basically she convinces him after a while to get married to him, her. And they have, I guess, a sort of Rakshasa Vivaha or Gandhara or whatever. Vivaha. And they get married and they have their kids. And Ravana is the firstborn, and then Kumbhakarna, Vidisha, and Surpanaka. So, somehow or other, Vidisha was born with some good qualities. You know, he took after the father, and the rest took after the mother. So Ravana was a Brahma Rakshasa. And actually, it's described in the Valmiki Ramayana that all of Vishravas's disciples left him. Because he was in his ashram and had all his brahmacharis there. And they said, Gurudev married a Rakshasini. So that, you know, they didn't like it, you know. You know, imagine that, you know. And of course, nowadays we have sannyasi gurus. But in the old days, the gurus were actually householders. The tradition in the Vedic system was the gurus were householders because the householders could take care of their disciples. They'd remain in one place and train them up in the ashram. And the sannyasis would just travel, so it wasn't so good for them to have disciples. The householders were better spiritual masters. So anyway, so all the brahmacharis, they said, Guru Maharaj is in Maya. And they all left him. And so he was just left with Ravana. And he trained up Ravana as an expert chanter of the Vedic mantras. That's why Ravana was so expert. And he was a Brahma Rakshasa, very powerful and very knowledgeable too. Super intelligent, big brain, or big 10 brains. Whatever, so. So anyway, so so Raman and his brothers and sister decided to execute austerities to Lord Brahma. And so they were worshipping Lord Brahma for different purposes. Raman eventually started to offer his heads to Lord Brahma, you know, cutting him off one after the other. And Lord Brahma said, what do you want? And he said, I want to become immortal. You know, normally this is what the demons ask for, immortality. And so Lord Brahma said, I can't give you immortality because even I am not immortal. But I can have you decide, you know, how you're going to be killed or how you're not going to be killed. Or what, you know, you ask for something else. Like Haranyakashipu, he had his list. He said, not in the daytime, not at night, not inside, not outside, not by man, not by beast, not by weapons. He gave all these different strictures. Not understanding the Lord has ways of figuring out how to kill someone. There's an interesting story in the Bhagavatam. It's not the Bhagavatam, sorry. It's in one of the Puranas. Oh, it's Mahabharata, sorry. About two demons who also asked for benediction. There were two brothers, Sunda and Upasunda. And these two brothers, they loved each other very much. And they asked for a benediction of immortality. Lord Brahma, of course, said you can't get it. And then basically, they said, well, please make it so the only way we die is if we kill each other. And they thought, we'll never kill each other. We love each other. But Lord Brahma had a plan. He created this beautiful girl called Tilotama, sesame seed girl, topmost sesame seed. You know, like sometimes the men say, my little sesame. No, they don't say that to their wife. No. Too bad. My little cute sesame seed. So anyway, so in those days, sesame seed, that was considered praising the wife. So Tilotama was so beautiful that some of the demigods, they grew extra eyes just to see her. Or extra heads also, just to see her. You know, because she circumambulated them. Then she went to see these two demons, Upasunda, who happened to be drunk. And when they saw her, they started fighting over her and they killed each other. So whenever Lord Brahma gives a benediction like that, it actually predicts how you're going to die, indirectly. So Raman, of course, asked, I don't want to be killed by any powerful yakshas, rakshasas, demigods, kandarvas. And he left out human beings and animals because, you know, who are they? I mean, just like if I asked for a benediction, I wouldn't ask for not being killed by an ant, would you? Who's in there? Of course, now they do have ants that eat people. As in Brazil, they have these army ants. They go through a village and they actually eat whatever they is in their path. People, cows, pigs, everything. But anyway, so I wouldn't consider an ant to be like a threat to me. But still, it can be. So Raman was thinking the same way. And Lord Brahma said, okay, you got that benediction. And then Kumbhakarna, of course, he had quite an appetite. All the demigods were worried that he was going to eat all the food, not leave anything over for them. He had a voracious appetite. And also he was quite big, too. He wasn't a small chap. So he wanted to have the throne of Indra, as you all know. And the goddess of learning, Sarasvati, resided on his tongue and caused him to mispronounce his word. Instead of Indrasana, Nidrasana. It's a little difference. Indra, Nidra, Nidra. So Nidrasana means a bed. I want a bed. And Lord Brahma said, okay, you can have it, you know, sleep forever. And Raman, he interceded at that particular point. He said, look, he's your creation, Lord Brahma. How can you do that to him? You should be kind and compassionate. And Lord Brahma said, okay, let's make a concession. He can wake up every 6 months. And But if he's woken up prematurely, then that's going to be it. He's going to die. And then Vibhishan, he was asked, what do you want? And Vibhishan said several things. But first of all, I want just eternal devotion to the Lord. And Lord Brahma said, you get eternal life too. So he blessed him with immortality. Because a devotee is immortal. I mean, the soul is always immortal, but the devotee has realized his immortality. Just like a sage, when he blesses a devotee, he says, you can either live or you can die. It doesn't matter. When he blesses a butcher, he says, don't live and don't die. And he blesses a king, he says, long live the king, don't die. And he blesses a brahmachari, die immediately. Because if brahmachari dies, at least he goes to the sun planet. You know, so anyway. So Vibhishan, he got that. And then you have cute little Sarpanaka. And she says, I just want the ability to make myself beautiful and change form at will. And he said, okay. And she used that later on, of course, with Ram, which we tried to attract Ram. So Ravan became so enthusiastic at that point that he thought, I've got it, and I can defeat anyone. So he tried out his newfound powers or immortality, so-called immortality, in different ways. One of the ways is he went to Yamaraj. You know, throughout the Ramayana, he's bragging that I have defeated death, the personified. You find this phrase many times recited by Ravan. So he goes to Yamaraj. And actually, the first thing he does, before he meets Yamaraj, he sees all these living entities who are being tortured by Yamaraj. And he frees them. He just like kicks all the Yamadutas in the face. Interesting. Out of compassion or something. And so they're all thinking, Ravan's our hero. All glories to his divine grace. So anyway, so they're worshiping him. And then finally he goes to Yamaraj and he says, let's fight. And so he has this fight with Yamaraj. It's going on back and forth, back and forth. And finally Yamaraj pulls out his Yamadanda, the staff of death, that nobody, except for pure devotees, nobody can actually defend themselves against this staff of death. And he gets ready to fire it at Ravan. And he hears a voice, don't do it. I have given Ravan this benediction. You don't want to make the benediction come to be false. And so Yamaraj just like disappears. Okay, what can I do? And so Ravan says, Jai! I defeated Ravan. Ravan says, Jai, I defeated Yamaraj. Haribo. He didn't say Haribo. He's not a devotee. So then he goes on, and he thinks next victim is Lord Shiva. But in the meantime, he's actually stolen the Pushpaka Vimana from Kuvera, his half-brother. He didn't fight with him because Kuvera just said, this is too much, you know, this half-brother is too much. He just surrendered it, and he surrendered Lanka. So what happened is that then he goes to Lord Shiva's abode, Kailash, and the airplane somehow or other lands. He can't fly it beyond a certain point because Lord Shiva's abode is very powerful. And, you know, even the airplane can't go there. So he goes to the outskirts of Kailash, and he sees Nandi guarding Mount Kailash, you know, Lord Shiva's bull. And he makes fun of Nandi. He says, you're an ugly bull. You're as ugly as a monkey. And then he gets cursed. And he says, all right, you're going to die because of a monkey. So then he goes further end, and he sees Mount Kailash, and he thinks, well, let me just give Lord Shiva and Parvati a good ride here. You know, I'm Ravana, the mighty Ravana. Lord Shiva can't kill me. I've got my benediction. So he picks up Mount Kailash, and Parvati on the top is just like really in anxiety about the whole thing, because she, you know, the whole thing's shifting back and forth. Lord Shiva knows what's happening. He puts down the his toe, big toe. Actually, here you call toes fingers. The craziest thing in Fiji, they said, look at your fingers, and they're referring to your feet. I don't know why. Isn't there a separate word for toe in the Hindi? No? They're called fingers. Foot fingers? Anyway, somehow or other, it's wild. So he puts down his toe, the big toe, and he pushes down on Kailash, and Ravana has his hands, all his hands, you know, there's 20 hands. 10 heads, you get 20 hands for 10 heads. That's the deal. And then Ravana is trapped underneath, and he doesn't know what to do. And then he starts singing songs to Lord Shiva. And there's some stories that he uses intestines as like a vena or something like that, but that's not there in the Valmiki Ramayana. So he starts singing songs. Lord Shiva is very pleased, and he hands him his trishira, his trident. So that's one of the weapons that Ravana has. But Parvati is very, very upset, because she's been disturbed, and she curses Ravana to die because of a woman. And Ravana is thinking, none of these things are going to happen. So then he has more encounters. Ravana goes and he attacks this king called Anaranya. Anaranya is actually one of the forefathers of Dasarath. You know, in other words, he came in the same dynasty, the Ikshvaku dynasty, the Sun dynasty. And he fights with him and he kills Anaranya. Anaranya, while he's dying, he curses Ravana to die, being killed by one of his descendants. That means someone who comes after Anaranya. So Ravana's cursed by that. Then Ravana sees this beautiful society girl named Ramba. She's a Gandharva. Not even the Apsara, sorry. Apsara. And Ravana says he becomes attracted to her. And he goes to her and he basically rapes her. And her husband happens to be Nalakupura. Remember? Manigriva, Nalakupura. And so Nalakupura curses Ravana that if you ever touch a woman again without her permission, you'll die immediately. So that's the curse that got Ravana in the condition, so he wasn't ready to forcibly do anything to Sita Devi other than take her away. And that's very important. Then Ravana is flying through the air in his Pushpaka Vimana, and he sees this... almost time. Ravana stories. We haven't even talked about Ravana today. I like Ravana better. Anyway, so Ravana, he sees this lady, Vedavati. She's meditating and to get Lord Narayan as her husband. And he lands his airplane. And what he does is eventually grabs her hair after proposing to her and she refuses. He grabs her hair and she makes her hand like a knife and cuts the hair. And she said, because I've been violated by you, I'm leaving this world. And I will take birth, again as and cause you a death. So there's some descriptions that she took birth actually in Lanka. And then she was found floating in a lotus flower. This is an interesting story that some of you may not know. And then Ravana had her thrown into the ocean to die, and she was carried by Varuna, the ocean god, given to Bhumi, the earth goddess, put in a little casket or a little box, whatever, and brought up through the earth, and Janaka Maharaj found her when he was plowing the earth. And that's how Sita came. Anyway, that's Sita. So I guess that's all we have time for today. There's a lot of information here. A lot of information. Next is Ravana. There's also Ravana fighting with Kartavirya Arjuna. But that's an interesting story. That's a really interesting story. Let's tell tomorrow. You got to read the duties. I mean, I just love the Robin stories. Maybe I was one of his associates in the last life. The demons are so attractive, isn't it? It's just, you know, it's exciting. Anyway, whatever. Okay, all glories to Srila Prabhupada, Sita Ram, Lakshman, Hanuman, Pujari.